Hello, 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 and welcome to the Middle Cup podcast brought to you by Pot Stilled Radio. As always, I'm your host, Pot Stilled Matt, also known in many circles and to my parents as Matt Healy. And I am lovely and delighted to be joined by the lovely Matt Jones from The Whiskey Nerd. Matt, how are you doing? Welcome to the show. Of course, the two Matts back again.
The two Matts back at us. Like, when you want one Matt, no, you're going to get two Matts. Always two is better than one.
Absolutely. And a very big thank you to our sponsor this episode, WD O'Connell Whiskey Merchants. As we've said before, phenomenal independent Irish whiskey, bonder and bottler, phenomenal facility down in Waterford in Kilmacomas, but now one of the choice independent bottling facilities in the country, whether you're a brand, a pub, a person with your own private cask, check out WD O'Connell Whiskey for their rates and of course their facilities as well for independent bottling services. Check them out, WD O'Connell Whiskey Merchants. So Matt, as always, I am delighted to have you here. Going to be talking about a number of very cool things and brands across the country, just like WD O'Connell, and a lot of developments going on with not only them but lots of other brands across the country. But before we jump into it, for those listening that don't know you or where to find you online, why don't you hit us with your social media channels and where people can find you?
Yeah, well, I am Matt. I'm known as The Whiskey Nerd because I review whiskeys. I make whiskey cocktails. I have a real focus on kind of bringing whiskey, especially like Irish whiskey, not just to people like myself, whiskey nerds, even though it is my name, but to people who want to get into it. So I have my reviews. I never give scores. I just tell you what the whiskey tastes like, what I think it tastes like. And if you like it, you can get it yourself. I also generally try to feature the whiskey I review in a cocktail because that's how I generally get people into cocktails, whether it's an old fashioned, a whiskey sour. It's always a great way to get people into it that might not think of themselves as whiskey people. If you can show them different ways to enjoy the whiskey, that's all. That's what I'm here about.
Absolutely fantastic. If you want to check out any of the Pot Stilled universe, of course you can. You can check us out on potstilled.com. We have the YouTube channel, Pot Stilled Radio. We have a multitude of archived episodes there with interviews as well as new release radars. You can check us out on Instagram at potstilled_, same on Twitter, and then Facebook. You can check us out at facebook.com/potstilled. So going forward, Matt, I know you have just come back from a single distillery event. Can you tell us what it was that you were sitting down to last night?
Well, I was sitting down to, I think you can see the bottle, if I can figure out the mirrored camera, that bottle right there, Lunasa, behind me. So it's Dingle's Wheel of the Year series. They're doing a great number of events where they kind of highlight different periods in the Celtic Wheel of the Year. So we are heading into August, even though it does not feel like we are heading into August with the amount of rain we've gotten, with Lunasa being the start of the harvest season, the kind of start of the end of the year, the second half of the year, where there's still a bit of summer, there's still a bit of work to be done, but it's definitely into that kind of Celtic-y feel. And Dingle have been putting on a lot of work, I think, recently in a good way. They've been highlighting all the different Celtic festivals, whether it's Samhain, whether it's Bealtaine, whether it's Lough na Bhriada, or into Lunasa just there last night. So it's great to see them. They get in a folklorist, they get in a historian. They have this great guy. He's an insane, in the best way, very Irish, Kerry man, insane, Angus de Stack. And he's a great guy. He tells you that, like, the history of it, like the kind of legends, the myths behind the Lunasa festivals, in the way that, like, you know, storytellers would have been telling it hundreds, 200, 300 years ago. And it's just a great little event. They highlight the whiskey, you get a little tasting, make a few cocktails, and they always do a kind of a food pairing where it's food that's very seasonal, very appropriate to the kind of turn of the year, and just a great little event.
So tell us about the actual whiskey itself, because you go to this event and you sit down, I presume, to maybe a type of deconstruction or a guided tasting with the head.
Yeah, so it's last night's one was a kind of a breakdown of some of the whiskies in the year so far. So we had the core range. We then went into like Bealtaine, and we had the Lunasa whiskey, which was the whiskey of the evening, of course. It's a double bourbon matured single malt whiskey. So it's Dingle's single malt, which is a great kind of slightly spicy, slightly fruity, kind of very Dingle. If you know Dingle whiskey, you know what it is. And it's that kind of that menthol-y, herbal, fruity kind of character to it. And it's been double matured in bourbon. So initially it was given a 3.5 year maturation in bourbon casks, which were sourced from a variety of places like Heaven Hill or a few different places around America. But then they finished it in a Widow Jane bourbon distillery, in a bourbon cask for another 3.5 years. So it's given a double bourbon maturation, really kind of doubling down on that butterscotch sweetness, bit of ginger spiciness, bit of cinnamon, a lot of kind of like sweet caramel notes that come through it. Widow Jane are an interesting little distillery over in Brooklyn in America. They're making some really interesting different whiskeys. So they got some very good casks from Dingle, got their good casks from Widow Jane to really kind of amp up the sweetness of that, of the original whiskey, appropriate for harvest time. I mean, you can see the grain symbol on it. Bourbon is a very grain forward distillate. It's 60%, I believe it was 70% corn in the Widow Jane mash bill, 20% rye and 10% malted barley. So it's going to give you a lot of extra kind of spiciness from that rye, but also a whole lot of sweetness coming through from that corn. And that kind of leads back into the idea of Lunasa being a kind of a grain harvesty time. And so that's why they chose that one for the release.
Is that an official word? Harvesty time?
Harvesty time, yes. Coining it, you heard it here.
You're a modern day poet coining your own words. Obviously, it's a very interesting direction we see Dingle moving in now. We've taken quite a big departure, I guess, from their what would have been the backbone, where their annual releases of the cask strength and then the core range, batch one through whatever number they get up to in the malts and the pot stills. The branding has kind of evolved a little bit with this range. I think it's very, the boxes you can see behind your head definitely have a very premium aspect and feel to them. They stand out quite a lot. For me, I think an interesting way to showcase as well as the breadth and brevity of the casks and also of the spirit as well that Dingle produces, maybe more so than their kind of annual releases would have done previously.
Because they say they've got about 20 different types of cask maturing at the moment. So they've got, obviously, some of their whiskey's going to be 10 years old, some going to be younger, and they've put it into casks. And it's a great way of kind of showcasing whiskeys that, A, are ready for production, ready for tasting, and kind of, B, will tie into the festival, whether it's, spring fruity berries that we saw with Yeltsin, was a single pot still finished in Australian Shiraz casks, now into that harvesty time with the extra grain notes from the bourbon. So it is, I think it's kind of cool. And the bottle, the boxes, the symbols on them are evolving and they're growing. They're turning from silver into gold as the wheel progresses, and it'll be over the 2 years. There are 8 symbols on the box. Apparently there are 9 whiskies, so there might be a surprise one somewhere, maybe at the end, to kind of round out the series. But yeah, it's a good little, I think it's good to show them kind of moving, especially as they move to that period where they might be looking to get a 10-year-old or an aged statement whiskey that they can reliably have on shelves, but still have releases. So it's a good way of kind of using that new 2 years to kind of build up enough stock so they have enough whiskey to supply demand. Because we don't want what happened with Japanese whiskey, where suddenly it got popular, everyone wanted it, it all disappeared and there was none available.
Absolutely. Well, looking at the harvesty time when we have outside, this is the wettest July on record. We're now rolling into August. I still haven't got my head around the fact it's 2023 and now it's August, but anyway, here we go. I said the wettest July on record, meant to be the height of our summer when we were going to get out and about and do fun outdoor things, but not to be had. But looking at the world of whiskey in wet climes, there's still a lot to do. For me, I don't know about you, but for me, I think this is perfect opportunities to be able to dive right into whiskey distilleries and whiskey experiences around the country. I know I've been to a lot of them. I know you've recently had a tour of quite a number of them, I think, in the Dublin area. Are there any that stand out to you, or what do you look for when you're going for whiskey experiences?
So I kind of take two approaches. As you mentioned there, I went on a bit of a tour. So my wife, for those of you who don't know, Rose the Whiskey Noob, although she's becoming less of a whiskey noob as time goes by. She became a citizen, so we had a party with a bunch of friends. We visited different cocktail bars and different whiskey distilleries, and we brought a heap of, like, I think it was almost 30 people at the height of the day, around different distilleries, around going to different bars, and just having a good time. And like, so when I look at distilleries and I look at experiences, I kind of look for two different things. As I said earlier, like, I do try to go for, I try to show off what's good about whiskey, how to enjoy it. So is there something that's there that's for the whiskey noobs, that's for the new people, and something that's there, maybe that's something that's a bit more exciting, a bit more kind of something for people who know about whiskey, who don't want to know whiskey is made from malted barley, malted, non-malted, goes into pot still, you know, the standard stuff, something that's a bit more, in-depth. So I tend to look for two different things. And honestly, the Jameson Distillery, I know people might not like hearing it, but they are a behemoth and they're a titan. And especially for new people, they have a whole range of options. They've got one where you make cocktails. They've got one where you fill your own bottle. They've got a whole load of experiences. And I think it's all packaged in a very beginner-friendly way. And that was, for a lot of people who are brand new to whiskey, one of the highlights of the day. But for me, if I'm looking for something, I'll tend to go for something that's a bit different. So Two Stacks, great brand, great production of whiskeys. They have a cool experience where you blend your own whiskey. You can take whiskey from the cask, taste it, and you can blend your own kind of version of their whiskey. And that's something that I like doing, where you get into it. You can actually get a good tangible feel for the distillery and for everything else, rather than just the standard old kind of tour of, you know, here's how a pot still works, here's how a column still works. So that's kind of how I think about it. And yourself?
Well, like you're saying, that there's obviously different aspects and ways of that you can approach whiskey tourism. A number of years ago, I think this is kind of probably a good adage. A number of years ago, I went to the Kentucky Bourbon Trail when I was living in the US, and I toured through multiple distilleries there. And like you're saying, about five or six tours in, you're getting the exact same, we make bourbon with 51% corn. And you know, it's getting into a very repetitive introductory life cycle. But one of the best tours I ever went on was in Woodford Reserve. And they have an elevated tour called From Corn to Cork, which is it's a twist on grain to glass at that point. Yeah. But from corn to cork, or at least they used to have this, and they would bring you with an assumed level of knowledge on a kind of an elevated tour. So, you know, it cost a bit more money, but you went with a knowledgeable tour guide. I think, you know, the normal tours had, you know, space for 30 people, and these had space for 12 or something. But you get to spend more time in amongst, you know, the washbacks, the stills. You get an elevated tasting at the end. But you're also not being greeted with kind of verbatim rote learned, we make whiskey with X, Y, and Z. And instead, you're having more kind of fluid conversations about things in the distillery, aspects of whiskey making. And this, as I said, there was probably about eight people on our tour at that time. And there was, he walked up to us at the very beginning and was like, I have an assumed level of knowledge for you. If you don't understand along the way, I will explain, but this is not a beginner's tour, if that makes sense. And that was thoroughly enjoyable, from spending whatever it was, 5 days of getting the same introductory tour. But there are a number of, I suppose, visitor experiences across the country that have varying, I suppose, aspects to them. Some vary, I guess, with the whiskies at the end rather than the tour content. And it will, I suppose, it will differ how and where you go. Some places are so small that you'll end up doing the tour with the head distiller or one of the, you know, distillery managers. And other places, I suppose, have different kind of touch points and feels. Like you said, the blending yourself, I think is a very cool aspect of doing it. I remember years ago in, like, I don't know, 2014 or something, being invited to Tullamore Distillery after they opened their new distillery, and being invited to blend my own like 200 mils of spirit. And it was a great eye opener because what I blended was shocking. It was awful.
Actually, speaking of Tullamore, did you see their new thing where they've got a new kind of a beginner friendly almost blending experience where you talk about what kind of flavors you want? So maybe you could go back and do it right this time.
Well, I would like to think my blending skills have come along a lot over the last 10 years. But yeah, it was funny being presented with multitudes and platitude or multitudes of and a plethora of amazing component whiskies, and then absolutely botching the blend at the end, which I thought was hilarious. But yeah, it's nice to see that blending experience is being re-encompassed in the new distillery experience as well. Are there any outside of Dublin that you've gone on that you would rate as distillery experiences?
A good one recently went on was so the Powers Court Distillery, the brand, the distillery behind Fir Cullen. They do a great, you can see a picture of one of their whiskies there. They do a great food pairing where they get local food that you can get, that you can only get in Wicklow where the distillery is. And they pair that against different aspects of the whiskey. They, for the Whiskey Society, we organized a deconstruction of their blended whiskey. We have the different components that go into it, and they paired great food against it. And it shows that they're not just doing that standard tourna tasting. You know, here's our source blend. They show you what goes into it. They show you what the flavors are. And it stood out as being different and a bit more kind of, I don't know, tactile or hands-on, that you're actually getting a bit of a food pairing. It's not just, here's three whiskeys we poured into a glass, off you go. Here's three whiskeys, we put a bit of food beside them so you can pair them, you can taste them, you can see how it can be used in different ways. And it felt just a bit more hands-on.
Well, that's pretty good. I mean, food is something that I think elevates a lot of those whiskey experiences. It can be used kind of blindly. And I know a lot of people that have attempted to do whiskey and food, and it's a tough one because whiskey and wine pairs very well because the alcohol level in wine is so much lower that you're drawing out a lot of complementary flavors. And it's very difficult with alcohol in whiskey being 40 to 70%, depending on what you're tasting, to do that in a complementary way. And a lot of times the contrasting flavors can be as beneficial with high alcohol. And when you talk about the new palates coming into it, that 40% alcohol for general people is a lot of alcohol. If you're used to drinking a gin and tonic that's watered down to 7 or 9%, or a beer that's 4, or wine that might be 12, 40 is astronomical, and it can very easily blind the palate to what you're trying to achieve. So those compare and contrast can be equally as beneficial as the complementary flavors, which is, I think, quite interesting. I have in my career one of the best food pairings I ever did was with a dessert and whiskey pairing, which I think was really cool. We were aiming towards the complementary flavors, drawing out one aspect of the whiskey into that. So there was four whiskeys and there was four kind of miniature desserts that went along with them. And it was kind of an in tandem tasting between myself and the dessert or the chef. I don't remember what you call a dessert chef. It's not a pastry chef, but anyway. The head chef that made all the desserts. That's what I'm going to go with. And what was quite cool about that was we had, if you had a bourbon forward whiskey, you obviously have those kind of vanillas and those caramels. You can bring in kind of a salt and salinity aspect with that to draw out some of that kind of caramel aspect. Then we did like heavily sherried whiskey that we went kind of a fruit compote or a coulis kind of direction to bring out some of those individual flavors. And this was kind of deconstructing, I had to do a whiskey tasting with the chef first. To showcase some of the flavors that were actually in the palettes and the bouquets of the whiskies, for then us to be able to pull those apart. Working with Virgin Oak was very cool because at that point we were able to do a very kind of thick cream and draw out some of that compare, that kind of that spice and wood prickle with a very kind of deep and luscious kind of cream, also vanilla forward, but kind of very creamy mouthfeel to kind of contrast against that virgin oak. And it's very fun being able to pull apart those different aspects, which is why I think food pairings can be really fun and explorative and really difficult if you're not, I suppose, like not paying attention to both sides, because I'm not a chef. I could guess at food stuffs that would work, but I don't have the culinary mind to be able to pull that in. Mm-hmm. And I think it was a very cool collaboration on that whiskey desserts pairing like that.
One of the Dublin distilleries does a great kind of food truck event during the summer. I mean, summer we're having is not a summer at all. It's the wettest summer we've had on record. But they do a great thing where, as you're saying, like you said, you sat down with the chef to kind of talk about the desserts you were putting together. They do a cocktail pairing. So rather than just pairing off straight whiskey, they make whiskey cocktails. But their, I guess, mixologist will be the cocktail maker. She will sit down with the restaurant that comes in and say, okay, what ingredients are you using? Oh, it's wild garlic, or it's beetroot, or it's something, and we'll make ingredients for the cocktail that complement the food. Because like you're saying, it can be very hard to pair food with the whiskey, especially when you're dealing with something savory. Like something sweeter can be sometimes a bit easier if it's a creamy, if like a berry or a chocolate, but something that's like meaty, that's like that kind of umami flavor, can often be a bit more challenging. And it can definitely help bring someone into whiskey. Mm-hmm. If you're saying, okay, here's an experience where you can enjoy food, you can enjoy, you know, the whiskey, you can enjoy maybe a cocktail on the side, because for a lot of people, it can be daunting. Like, not to be repeating what you said, but it's exactly right. Like, that 40% can blow the head off people. And that's why these kind of experiences where you do a tour, you get to know the kind of process, you get a bit of a tasting maybe on the way, and then you can enjoy something is very important, I think, for getting people in, especially for now. When we've got all these new brands, we've got loads of new distilleries. Some of them have very young stuff. They're maybe using still source stock, or they're transitioning from source into their own whiskey, showing off something that's different, highlighting what they're planning on doing, what they are doing, more than just a tour and a tasting, is great. And I think those are great ways for brands to explore the development of a kind of a loyal customer base.
Absolutely. And I think for the most part, most distilleries are using source product to some degree if they are filtering out and bringing in their own stock, or still using it, because in most cases, the distilleries are less than five, if not less than three. And even at less than five, there's a number of distilleries that want to hold on to their own stock until it reaches X age. Ecklinville being a great example, their stock is 10 years old this year, and they still haven't released any of their own spirit. Now, they've released some in their Old Cumber blended pot still, but not as a standalone. They've just been becoming one of the most popular brands with source stock, which is phenomenal. But I'm very excited to see when they release their own product. But they've been holding that very closely guarded for 10 years, you know. But they also, you know, when you go to those and look at those brands and distilleries that aren't in the major cities, you'll also start seeing, I suppose, the offerings change in terms of what you get to see when you get to the distilleries. With the likes of the Jameson's or Middleton, you know, it can surprise people sometimes coming to distilleries that you can actually, you know, you're amongst the stills and the distillers. I don't think that people, I guess, expect a little bit to be in a visitor experience or a visitor center rather than in amongst the stills, which can be very beneficial and great to build advocacy for the brand. And of course, if you have a terminal velocity of guests and tours, that can be hugely beneficial in terms of cash flow for a distillery. But you know, from working in the industry so long, it's funny seeing different aspects, because getting people in is great as well, but there's also essentially a quality or a caliber of people you want to get in. And then looking from a pure commercial point of view, there's a spend per customer that comes through as well. You look at it in multiple different ways. There's a marketing angle, there's a branding angle, and this, yeah, of course, everything has the commercial angle. And you know, if your tours cost, say, €15 per person, it can be very appealing to get tour buses full of people through the doors, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those things that if it's a tour bus of octogenarian French people, that, you know, don't spend
French
any money.
It's always the French with you.
The French come in tour buses still, and they don't spend any money when they're in their 80s. And fair play to them, they can do whatever they want in their 80s. But there's a penchant for the French tour group organizers to send them to distilleries. And in general, as kind of a target consumer, there are better people in terms of branding to get through the door. You know, if these people aren't whiskey consumers, to have, you know, if those tour groups of 35-year-old, you know, middle income people that, yeah, be bussed in through your door, that's a very valuable tour. And then when you go through the whole process, you're building kind of, or attempting to build, those kind of brand advocates. But when you get to the end of the tour and the old adage of please leave through the gift shop, that is the opportunity to build more brand advocacy, but also, you know, retail your, you know, distillery exclusive whiskeys or whatever it might be. And then you have the toss up of what do you offer? Because there's a, you know, if you're looking at per customer revenue, there's, and it's how people, how accountants measure these things is the spend per customer. And the funny thing is, if you offer things like miniatures, which is always, you know, it can be great. The argument for things like miniatures would be that you're going to get more people putting their hands in their pocket to spend. If they wouldn't have spent before, you now are going to get them to spend 5 or 6 or 8 or 10 euro, whatever it might be. But the counter argument for that is if someone was going to buy
a full size
bottle, yeah, you can now talk yourself out of a 80 euro sale for a, you know, a 6 euro miniature. So it can be little swings and roundabouts like that. And these visitor centers have to balance those to try and, I suppose, benefit both the branding and marketing, and then also, you know, the commercial heads in the distillery, yeah, as well.
And I think for one of those aspects, I think, of building the brand, especially with with people who are here new, or like the octogenarian French people, it can be a thing where if you're looking at a distillery exclusive, it's like maybe something you haven't yet tasted, on the tour, you might be talking yourself out of that sale. And I think Teeling, I think it is, who do good, their distillery exclusives, you can buy them at the bar. So during when you exit through the gift shop, you go to the bar. I don't think they exited the gift shop, they exit through the bar. And you can then taste the whiskeys and you can say, oh, I had my kind of core lineup, I had my core range and my tasting, that's been grand. Maybe I want something a bit different. You try the distillery exclusive and then you can kind of talk them into it. You can't buy a miniature of the distillery exclusive to take away. You can only buy a little sample of it. And if you like it, then you say, oh, I'll have to get myself a full bottle of it. So it's one of those ways, I think, as you're saying, to try and balance that push to get revenue in, to get, especially as a new distillery, especially if you're still waiting to sell your own whiskey and you're buying stock in from other people, to then build that loyalty, have your distillery exclusive. And then the idea of what you put into the distillery exclusive, is it going to be something that's just for the nerds, just for the people who are really into whiskey, or is it going to be something that's a bit more mass marketable, mass appealable? And then do you then lose out on people who are advocates, people who are going to be really passionate about whiskey? They say, oh, the exclusive was just, you know, bourbon and sherry, kind of easy. Or do you want the people who are new to the brand whiskey who say, oh, this totally exclusive was really easy to drink, bourbon and sherry? That toss up, I think it can be a challenge. And I think that's where we go into that idea, as you're saying, was it the from corn to cork, the differentiated levels of tasting, where you can have, yeah, that. Yeah. So I think that's kind of a great way of having that ability. And I think a couple of distilleries that I've seen are doing that, where they offer that differentiated tasting for the new people and the nerdy people to kind of get them to the door, and then to have it so that everyone on the tours are having fun, because you don't want someone basically dragging on along their other half, dragging their husband or their wife to a tour they don't want to go to. You go, oh, you'll go to the easier tour, I'll go for the more expensive tour. But everyone at the facility having a good time, rather than people saying, I just want to get out of here.
I mean, I love the corn cork idea. It's one of those things that is infinitely difficult to pull off in reality, or it can be, because you need a person that is Matt Jones, the whiskey nerd, level of knowledge to pull off that tour. And with a lot of, you know, distilleries and tours, it can be quite seasonal work, or it can be people in college or whatever, might be part-time work. And it's hard to build up or retain high levels of knowledge that way, which can be difficult to execute those kinds of things, because you can teach a script at a high level of knowledge if you don't have that. But that's kind of like one of those things in like an interview that, you know, once you start asking questions, that all falls apart. Now, alternatively, you can get just maybe a distiller to do a tour like that. But then ultimately you're in a different question, that it's, you know, it's a distiller's time. They're paid to do it, you know, a job. And another point on that is distillers aren't marketers, so they might not want to talk to people. There's plenty of distillers I know that hate people.
I can think of a few distillers who are very much like, shut up, just drink it. Just drink it. It'll be fine. Just stop talking to me.
Why are you here? I know a distiller once that said the distilling industry is great, except for all these people that keep coming to try to look at the place, which always makes me giggle, in the sense he's like, it's a leave me alone. Like, I want to do my job and get on with it.
Yeah, I think I might know. Oh, there's a couple who I think if they could just run the distillery and drink their own whiskey, that would be it. They don't want to sell it. Just know, I'll just make my whiskey the way I want to drink it. Nobody else needs to try it. Nobody else needs to come near me. Just let me drink my whiskey. That, I can think of a few who are definitely like that. Like, what are all these customers doing here trying to buy my whiskey? Leave it for me.
Why are you bothering me with this nonsense of buying whiskey and visiting distilleries? But I think I might have brought this up before, but like the concept of visiting a whiskey distillery is a unique enough concept for the drinks industry. You know, save for a few places of like high prestige, like I'm sure people go and tour like the Lamborghini factories and Mercedes-Benz and maybe like Tabasco. You know, if there's a large following to a cult degree, but like nobody's gone with other consumer goods like, oh man, I love me a good Apple PC, an Apple computer, I'm gonna go off to the Apple factory and I'll see how they put this together. Like that's a unique concept to want to go to the birthplace. Like you do with breweries, you do with distilleries, because there's a romanticism there. But if you take away our industry specific words, they're factories, you know, to a degree, and you don't get very excited to visit pencil factories or you know you've got video games. No one's going, yeah, I have to go see where they make Xboxes, man.
Yeah, they say, oh, I want to see those machines just working. Yeah, even though, as you said, a still is a machine, and like it goes to that kind of romanticism of a craft, and you can have a big tourist experience that's, you know, like the massive brands, like, oh, here's something, it's mass produced, but you kind of expect that. Or you can have those little craft distilleries where, like, you can have somebody walk around, you can see the stills, you'll try to touch the still, you'll get burned by the still, have a nice little memory. But it's to have kind of a
this is the burn I got. This is the burn I got from Ecklinville, and this is the burn I got from Teeling, and this is the stop touching stills. When you do exit through the gift shop, apart from a distillery only exclusive bottling, which is always a great idea,
What catches your eye on the way out the door? Like, you're in the gift shop. Everyone has a plethora of different what we call POS or point of sale materials, things, t-shirts, keys, keychains, bottle openers, beer coasters, whatever it might be. What catches your eye when you're going through these distilleries? What does Mac Jones want you to think about or want in
It's
his
definitely
basket?
not a hip flask. I've got too many hip flasks. It's definitely not glasses. I mean, I love a good glass, but don't get me wrong. I've run out of shelf space, the amount of branded glasses I've got. What's
Have you got one of these? This was a key piece of marketing I had in when I worked at Tullamore Dew. It is a Bible with a hip flask in the inside of it. Funnily enough, with the as I look at this now, I didn't notice at this time, it's the wrong branding on the hip flask. It's the pre-2010 branding of Tullamore
God.
Dew, but the box is the right branding.
I
And
just
I
have a
got
bunch of
into,
leftover flasks, they said.
yeah, clearly. I got into a multitude of places that I shouldn't have been able to, and with this, because people would search your bags and they'd be
See
like,
a
"What is
Bible.
this?" And you're like, "Bible." And they go, "All right, yeah, cool, go on in." And you're like, "Thank you."
So for me, what I look for is I don't want to say something different, but something different. I mean, some of the brands, they'll be, let's say they've got a whiskey that's finished in a beer cask. You can buy the beer from that cask. If it's, or they'll have like a like something like, not a distillery, you know, it is, might be a distillery exclusive, but it's something that's not your normal. It's something that's a bit weird. Jameson do a weird seaweed bitters. The only time I've ever seen it, but they use it in their cocktail. So something that kind of ties me back to the distillery. If it's something that I'm like, oh, this was the thing I got when I was there, I'm gonna have it. It's not specific, maybe to the distillery, because seaweed bitters, they're different. A beer, Jameson definitely don't make beer, or Teeling don't make beer, but it's like, oh, this is something that I can kind of connect to the brand or to the whiskey, or I can pair it with something else that's a little bit different. So it's definitely something that's like that, where I can get the beer. I can get the, like, W.O.D. O'Connell, we were talking about them earlier. They've got a whiskey that was finished in a stout cask. You can buy the stout if you go into the off license where it's being sold, where the whiskey's being sold. You can buy the stout alongside it. So that kind of complementary goods, rather than just a branded good, is something I'd be looking for.
Too, yeah. A good moment to jump in and say a very big thank you to our sponsors, WD O'Connell Whiskey Merchants. Check them out at wdoconnell.com. The guys, obviously, behind the Bill Phil, and then, of course, their brand new bottling facility. If you need Irish whiskey bottling or spirits bottling in general, check them out in their site in Kilmacthomas. For me, yeah, I'm with you on that. I'm not usually a guy picking up branded t-shirts in distilleries in
Except
Ireland.
for one branded
Oh.
t-shirt, which you will go on about.
Sorry?
Except for the one branded
Yeah, well,
t-shirt.
I was gonna say I will, and that's the Silky from Sleeve League. It's the best branded t-shirt I own. And the funny thing is, I spoke to James Tardy, the owner, at Whiskey Live this year, and he said that whoever looks after his brand and stuff changed the t-shirt manufacturer. And he got them and he was like, "These are shit, Matt doesn't like, won't like them." Get the old ones back. And they changed back to the old manufacturer. And I'm delighted. I have this influence by talking about this t-shirt enough. It is great. Go check it out. But for me, Rowan Co. does, obviously they're Diageo, and the Diageo has great marketing departments. But they're gift shop has phenomenal offerings. Well, according to me, I have a multitude of their Irish coffee glasses. I think they're the sexiest Irish coffee glasses around. They have like Collins glasses that are like etched Collins glasses with kind of floral designs and Rowan Co. base.
I
I have a lot of
use
those too.
pretty much, if anyone's ever watches my cocktail videos on YouTube, you'll see a lot of Rowan Co glasses. But like you said, they're etched. They're nice design. They're not with a big old branding across it. It's just a nice glass, and like, that's
Yeah, it's great.
complimentary.
If you drink it,
You're staring at a Roam Co. emblem on the base of the glass, but it's not like they're really like if I had a cocktail bar, I'd happily stack or store their glasses. And then they also have enamel mugs, which I really like. Their brand is the kind of their oxidized copper green blue color with the windmill on one or the old windmill on one side and Roam Co. on the other, and like a black lip. I really like those. I like enamel mugs like that. But it's funny when I go abroad, clever t-shirt designs and stuff from breweries and distilleries, I will pick up. But that's probably one more of those things that in Ireland it's not a novelty to me, if that makes sense. But I have like Kyoto Brewing Company, and I bought a t-shirt that says Kyoto Brewing Company. You know what I mean? So it's one of those things when it's far away, I find more joy of like finding in the wardrobe and being like, oh yeah, class, I'll pop this on. But yeah, I kind of think it's one of those things that there's other things that like smart pens or jiggers or keychains never excite me too much. But maybe I'm jaded. I've been working in the industry a decade. Maybe I've just bought too many of these from the distillery side to still find them exciting.
Speaking of, like, also just as you mentioned the shirt, but it reminded me, Roam Co. Their shirts, a lot of their shirts are made by a really cool Irish company called Gill and Gill, and they do really cool designs on a lot of the shirts. They're like, you wouldn't know if you know it's a whiskey distillery, you can kind of pick out, oh, that's where the still is and that's where this is. But it's kind of there's like a word for like it's not like just a here's a picture of a whiskey still. It's a bit kind of abstract and a lot of their stuff. And also their hoodies are very comfortable. That company Gill and Gill, one of Rose's I think favorite hoodies she wears at all times is one of those. And you wouldn't expect it to be a whiskey company, but it's they using that brand, that Gill and Gill company. So I think yeah, when there's a good offering and there's a good kind of synergy and it's not over the top, especially with local, yeah, definitely. I do appreciate it from time to time.
Exactly. Well, I think it's a good time to wrap it up here. As I said, it is the wettest summer in Ireland on record. Whether you're a tourist coming to the country for the first time, your 10th time, or you're a local, enjoy the rain. But make sure to check out any of the whiskey or gin distilleries around the country that are near you or wherever you're going. Check out their offerings, because there's a lot to offer. There are a couple as well that will do takeaway bottles for those who are designated driver, so you will not have to miss out on the experience as you sit there and watch all of your friends sip away on the lovely whiskeys. You can take them home with you in certain distilleries. Not everyone has that facility, but it's a nice thing to be able to offer. Once again, a very big thank you to WD O'Connell Whiskey Merchants, our sponsors of this episode. Again, they're fantastic whiskies like the Bill Phil. And now, of course, they are a bottling facility unto themselves in Kilmacthomas in Waterford. So make sure to check out their website if that is something that interests you in the world of whiskey, that you have your own cask, you're a bar, you're a bottler, you're a brand, whoever you might be and in need of bottling facilities. Check out WD O'Connell Whiskey Merchants for more. But Matt, from this Matt to that Matt, thank you very much for being with us. To all of you listening at home, I hope you've had a good time. And let us know what whiskey distilleries and tours you make to this season, because there's a lot out there. And as you said, Matt, a lot more opening every day.
Exactly. Sláinte.
So.